of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. I want to see you. I want to see you.
Welcome to another broadcast from LifePoint Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Wherever you are at this point in life, we pray that God will use the following message as a source of help and encouragement as you listen. Stay tuned at the end of today's broadcast to learn how you can contact us for additional resources or to receive further spiritual help. And now, here's today's message.
I do want to just tell you some good news as we're getting going here. In fact, when I ask North American congregations what a question, I usually get the same answer, and you probably can tell me what answer I get. When I ask them, what's the fastest growing religious group in the world, what do they tell me? Islam. And I understand that, North America, with all of our foreign policy stuff and all that. But I've got some great news for you. The fastest growing religion in the world is Christianity. In fact, Philip Jenkins, who studies it, Philip Jenkins, who studies this, you know, says there'll be about 2.5, 2.7 billions by the middle of the century. You know, my tribe, Baptists, we don't think we're that there are that many of us, so those numbers are suspect. But some of you will figure that out later on. But let's just say that middle of the century is too far to you think ahead. Let's just think about the next 24 hours. Let me just tell you what's going on in the kingdom, since that's what we're here about. And I'll give you some numbers, although some of you may say, where did you get that? I don't know, I'm just making them up. But I say them, and then other people say them, and then it becomes an established fact. It's kind of like, whoever was first said they ought to have 8 glasses of water a day. I mean, who could do that and keep a job? At least have to move the office, But do you know what country where there are more people coming to Jesus into the kingdom every single 24 hours than any other country? China. Now, estimates range widely there, but we are safe to say, we're talking about between now and tomorrow night when we meet again to have grilled chicken salad. There are tens of thousands of people who will come into the kingdom. Tens of thousands. It could be as many as 100,000. In fact, we don't even know, because it's growing so fast over there, and in so, well, you know, mostly house churches, because they don't know how to do church right. And so one of my students at Fuller this past summer is connected to the house church movement, and he used to say, once you get over 15, you begin to get attention, from the government and stuff. So, you just kind of keep this other. So we really don't know. But it's just growing like crazy. Or let's go to India. 40 to 50,000 new believers over the next 24 hours. Again, mostly in house churches. A friend of mine, Wolf Simpson, some of y'all have read Houses to Change the World. Wolfgang was, last time I saw him, was just back from Pakistan. You wouldn't consider that to be the hotbed of the Christian movement on planet Earth, but there was a meeting of house church leaders. On the way from the conference that they had, on the way back to another village, they planted 6 churches on the bus. I'll take my street, I'll take my... Contrast that with what it takes for us to crank out another church widget. Or another worship widget. Or another fall program widget. Or I could talk to you about post-tsunami Indonesia. And the fact that we have reports of entire villages converting. Don't believe those reports that the country is 95% Muslim. Don't believe it. Christianity may be approaching as much as 18%. Or go to Africa. 3% Christians started the last century. 47% Christian today in spite of AIDS, poverty, civil war. Everything you can throw at that continent. Church growing like crazy. Or you could go to, well, I mean, I could just keep going. But the point of this is, In many places of the world, there's a Pentecost every single hour. It is AD 30 all over again. Now, would you like to just take a wild guess at where it's not AD 30? Just a random shot. Everywhere the Western, because having said this good news to you, I now bring you the word that we've got a tall hill to climb. Because everywhere the Western church has put its footprint, and by the way, 1900, 80% of the Christians in the world, white, Western, Northern Hemisphere. The year 2000, 80% of Christians in the world, non-white, non-Northern, non-Western Hemisphere, non-Western culture. Everywhere the Constantinian church footprint is, the church is struggling. See, you and I are in the backwaters of the Christian movement on planet Earth. We hear stories of kingdom expansion. We read our denominational publications and we order DVDs from mission houses and folks come and they talk to us about resurrections for crying out loud and about healings and about the spirit falling and about and imams to giving stories about, you know, Jesus appearing to them in their dreams and you know, and we go, whoa. And of course then we realize God's pretty much through North America. He just wants our money. And some of that's dried up. So the first thing I would tell you, and I really mean this, when I bring you reports of what's going on from all over, and most of my work, in fact, almost, well, all of it, I work inside the Western Church trying to bring reports of kingdom stuff from faraway countries. But I have a hope and a dream that I will live to see Pentecost in my home, on our land, where you and I live. And if we're going to seek first the kingdom, the first thing I'd say to you about that is the word is seek. We're going to have to want it. We haven't needed the kingdom. I mean, can we talk? We know how to do what we're doing. We can crank out church. We can crank out a sermon. We can crank out a book. Some of us is harder than others, obviously. Now, people ask me, I haven't read my stuff. I'm terrified of what is in there. We're going to have to want it. I don't know how badly you want it. I don't know how badly I want it. I know how to get along in the world pretty well. I've got a financial advisor. I've got a nice home. I've got kids that are doing well. I get to roam around and persecute Christian leaders at nice places. It's a great gig if you can get it. The kingdom? Why would I want to mess up what I've got? You see, it seems to me that if we're going to seek first the kingdom, and if you're going to change the conversation like you're trying to do in your denomination, to really say that in, you know, 1,000 churches and 1,000,000 ways to do one thing, you're going to have a conversation that changes your culture. And that conversation is going to have to make the biggest shift that I think can be made. And I don't know if you can do it. It doesn't keep me from telling you what it is. But I will tell you, it won't be done by us beating our chest and all agreeing to it and signing up for next year's Second Thing Conference. Because you're going to have to live your way into this. But I do want to just at least tell you some of the challenges that's going to have to happen if you are serious about this. Now, I don't know if you are or not. And I don't mean that in a, I just don't know. Because the proof of it's out there. But let me just tell you what you're going to be up against. Because the shift that's got to occur is the shift from looking at the kingdom through church lenses into looking at the church through kingdom lenses. Now let me just give you some ideas of what that means, or some hunches. Because this is going to change the scorecard. This is going to change your job and mine. This is going to change the way we really, what we see God up to in the world. Because we have been told all of our lives, I've been at this a while. I grew up in church, you know, like many of you. And as I told the crew this afternoon, you know, I mean, generations of ministers in my family. I mean, we've worked hard at getting the church to where it is. So it's my fault. That's right. Yeah, congratulations, Jay yelled out from that. So, you know, so let me see if I can back us out of where we're headed. I'll just give you some. See, I grew up hearing stuff like, if we don't get it done, we're plan A, there's no plan B. And if we don't get it done, it's not going to get done. That is crock-a-doodle-doo. The king is not waiting on us to get it, to do it. Because last time I checked, he sets the agenda. This is why, by the way, we have imams coming to missionaries saying, your Jesus has appeared to me in my dreams. Can you help me with this? Because the king's not waiting on the church to catch up. You see, in AD 30, the church was behind because the spirit had gone nuts. They never really expected it to get to the Samaritans. I mean, even though they'd been with Jesus in Sychar and they'd heard John 4, you know, and because they lived through that, and even though they'd been on this little mission trips to the Samaritans and all this stuff, they were still shocked. Like, you got a challenge with your people. These are people that hung out with Jesus for crying out loud for 3 years. And it was still a shock when the gospel went to the Samaritans. Tell me, where's the hot zone I can walk into? And it got worse after that, didn't it? It went to the Italians. I mean, by the time, can you hear back there at all now? Yeah, there we go. There we go. Hey, y'all, quick, get off your smoke break. Fix this. All right. Can't see you over there, but I'm on your side, really, no matter what I act like. So, you know, the thing that happened is we got so, the spirit had gone so wild that by the middle of the book, they had to call a meeting. They had a one thing conference. And they had people bring an agenda. Hey, we can't let these people in until they pay their dues. We can't let these Gentiles just come into it unless they become Jews first. This is a high expectation membership class that they established there. And so, I mean, it's, you know, this is pretty serious stuff. I mean, you know. And so, but you know, the church votes, and all heaven stood still, of course, waiting on the church to make a decision over whether or not the Spirit could keep doing this. You see, the whole subtext of the first half of the book of Acts is the church is having to play catch up to the Spirit. We are right back there again. I don't know if you want to run this fast or not. But the Spirit's not waiting on us. God's not waiting on the king. And there are evidences of it. I mean, I could tell. But you know what? Church people get together and we rehearse church statistics. Let me give you some more stuff, even though I started there. Let me tell you what's going on in North America that tells you that the king is on the move, or like C.S. Lewis, Aslan's on the move kind of thing, or Ranger Bob or whatever. I can't remember all those names. Hero, I remember that because I'm not particularly feeling it. All right, so for instance, there's a rise of altruism. Americans are still giving it an unprecedented, and it's not just Oprah, and it's not just Bill Gates, and it's not just Buffett, it's not just, you know, Bonner. It's Well, he's an automaker. $300 billion last year. Well, $295.7 billion, give or take, to charity. $95 billion of that, by the way, went to the church. The next biggest thing on the list was education. It just drops down to about 18%. I'll come back to that. What could you do with $95 billion later? But this rise of altruism, where you go, today I was in Starbucks and they wanted me to support this. There were like four different things I could have supported by buying different things. So I just stole stuff. It was just easier. I thought, support me, you know. I'm a cause here. I'm a cause. Or you can go to Gap, or you can go to, you know, go online and give 18 grains of rice, they were reporting USA Today. There's this enormous upwelling of people wanting $70 million on American Idol last year. You remember that? Even Simon Cowell cares. There's a proof of the existence of God. I mean, he almost cried. I mean, it was remarkable. There's this enormous, I'm telling you, the king is on the move. With all of the problems that you and I think we got over, the problem of evil and suffering and giving a, you know, account for that, let me tell you, the problem of good is profound for atheists. Because with all the bad in the world, why is there so much good? Because I'll tell you why. Because there's a king who is good. And he is whispering. And you see, he made everybody. And so when he whispers, there's a resonance. It blows across the street and it causes us to vibrate in our hearts. Even though we may be distant, he whispers. So the rise of this altruism is a sign the king is on the move. There's a sign. Because people are starving to death. They are starving for spiritual vitality. They're not coming to our churches to find it. It's the first spiritual awakening in our history in America that's happening outside the church, when most of our churches are too secular for the culture, because we don't need God to run them, and people come in and don't find him. Not your church. I'm talking about the people that didn't show up. But this hunger for spiritual vitality, just turn on Larry King. And only church people lament that Oprah stole God from us. I mean, you know, and church people think they got to run, recapture God and drag him back into the church like the Ark of the Covenant or something. You know, he belongs to us. Got news. He's the king. And he's quite at home in the world. Only church people are nervous in the streets. In fact, this hunger, all of these signs that are pointing to this wave, this stuff that's building, it causes us to think, wait a minute, the kingdom is much bigger. And so here we are playing catch up, because all of this is happening, and you and I've got to decide if we're going to paddle out to meet this wave. Are we going to join the Acts 15 group that says, by golly and by God, we'll go with you, or do church? And so, if we look, we're going to have to reorient our we're just going to, because we've been looking out at this kingdom through church lenses that had us think us them, that God is most at home in the church, and that he shrink-wrapped his redemptive mission, the world, down to what's going on in the church, and that God looks at church statistics to see how stuff's going. Do you really think that's all? Do you think on Sunday afternoon God say, hurry up with those numbers, Gabe. We got to, you know, I don't, how did we do today? Are you kidding? But you see, only church people said, how many were here today? Listen, in every one of these parables that we heard today, we just got this thing all screwed up. They were counting who was there. God takes attendance by who's missing. Got a missing boy, got a missing son, got a missing a coin, got a missing sheep. It's just a total different scorecard in the kingdom. It's not about what's happening here on this piece of ground. It's about what's going on out there where real people with real life, with real issues, with real hopes, So we got to have a new scorecard if we're going to look at the church through kingdom eyes. It's not about how many showed up Sunday. What a small, small kingdom that would be. But how many better marriages have we got in this town? How many more kids are headed someplace instead of headed away? How many hungry children now got food? Just in case these things matter to God. I grew up looking at the kingdom through church eyes. Like I said this afternoon, hearing that if you want to run into Jesus, come to church. How silly. He probably shows up some. Although I go to a different church every week, and a lot of them, I don't think so. But there's one place he's guaranteed to be. He's guaranteed to be in the street. The Son of Man came to save the lost. So where's he hanging out? I grew up in a church-centric view of the world with the idea that the church was the destination. So it caused me to participate in all kinds of program responses based on that to get people on a certain lifestyle, on a certain rhythm, on a certain culture to do certain things and then think we're making progress. Now, don't hear what I'm not saying. I don't mind people coming to church. I'm not against people doing it. Please don't hear what I'm saying. But what a silly little small bandwidth. If we're really going to think kingdom. You see, because if we think the church is the destination, we don't get it. If you're going to seek first the kingdom, don't stop off at the halfway place of the church. I'll show you the difference. To get to here this week, I had to negotiate airports, like many of you. Living where I do, I go through Atlanta, Hartsfield, Jackson International Airport. And about three or four times a week, probably, sometimes. Now, Atlanta Airport, occasionally, like every day, or at least several times a week, I'll be generous, gets the scorecard all screwed up. Atlanta Airport, when it confuses itself as the destination, thinks it's winning when all the planes are on the ground close to the hub and the concourse is throbbing with people. Boy, we're winning now. Look at how many people. And every time Atlanta does that, it screws up people's lives. Just look at them. They're frantic. They're desperate to try to get out of there. When the church thinks it's the destination, we screw up the scorecard. We think we're winning if all the planes are on the ground close to the hub and our activities are... Are you kidding? Don't hear what I'm not saying? I'm not arguing the smaller your church, the more spiritual or effective you are. I didn't say that. The more irrelevant you are, certainly the more the king loves you. I didn't say that. But I got to tell you something. The airport's a connector. I never wake up. It's a connector to get me somewhere I want to go. I'm completely jazzed about being with you, so I was quite willing to negotiate airports to get here. Can I tell you something? I never wake up saying, hot dog, I get to go to Atlanta, Hartsfield, Jackson International Airport today. They reopened Popeye's Chicken on Concourse C. You know, I never think, you know, or Cincinnati or something. But I'm totally jazzed to be with people where I've been assigned. Now, the church is not the destination. But it plays the important role, the airport, it's a connector to get people where they really want to go. And that's called life. Lucky for us, that's what Jesus said he came to give. He didn't say, I've come to give you church and give it to you more abundantly. And has been pointed out already tonight, the flip side of 100 times the kingdom is used only twice. The church in the New Testament, in the red letter words. The destination is the kingdom. Because that's where life is. Because that's where the king is. And his son has come from there to tell us that he's come to broker that life. So, to flip our lenses, to look at the church through kingdom lenses, mean not that we're going to start thinking about, if you want to seek first the kingdom, it's not about ramping up more church stuff. See, the enemy of the kingdom would love to keep you running around the firehouse or the ranger house and not getting out to the fires. The enemy of life would like to keep you, who answered the call to change the world, chained to something that's sucking the life out of you. The enemy of the king would like to have us not get the big story. So don't fall for it. There is a point to the people of God. When I ask people if the church is not the destination, church people get real nervous about that. Because we don't know what our role is then. Because we've shrink-wrapped all of our stuff down to God's activity on the planet. It involves us, doesn't it? And then everything else is kind of extra. I mean, why else would we spend... In fact, I just saw a new survey came out today. Half of churches spend less than 10% on any social need in their community. 18%, something like this, 18% spend over 30%. Why would we be so completely internally focused if we got it? So to flip this around, I like what you say. We're going to have to reinvent who we are and our basic understanding of who we are. So what's our role? What's the point of the people of God if the people of God aren't the point? And I'm telling you, it's that big of a change. And it's going to be that much of a shellacking and hubris admitting that we're going to have to realize we're not the point. But we have a great role. The king has decided to cut us in. It's not our mission that we're asking him to bless. He's on a mission, and he's decided to let us in on it. You go back to Genesis 12, where the whole people of God thing gets going. And if we understand this about us, it changes everything. It becomes a portal for us to enter a new scorecard regime. It becomes a way for you to think about your role that's so liberating. And it also becomes a way of framing responsibilities that helps us make sense and makes us good stewards, better stewards of $95 billion. Abram, I'm going to bless you so that you can what? Yeah, we used to say be a blessing. It's right. Can I just tweak it just a bit? Because it's a hard phrase of theirs. It's a very technical phrase. That's why it's so variously translated. Abram, I want to bless you so you can turn around and bless everybody who's not in your tribe, who's not in your family, who's not like you. Bless everybody else. That's the point. The people of God have one job. If you want to do a million things to help 1,000 churches in a million ways, do the one thing. Your job. If you're going to live out, just to put some flesh on, just to put an idea around what it means to be the presence of Christ, be Christ in the world, it's this. Your job is to bless people. Now, what that means is, I tell congregations all the time, don't have an evangelism strategy. Give up on that. Most of us, it feels like a drive-by shooting anyway in people's lives. We just want to dump something on them and run, you know. We want to hand out something or, you know. Don't have an event. Have a blessing strategy. I would ask if I came to church, what is currently is your blessing strategy? We have the freedom and the privilege and the responsibility to bless everybody. Not our job to convict them of sin. Boy, I got people in my tribe that think that's our job. Pharisees, we are full of Pharisees. I mean, only Pharisees think you can, you know, clean fish before you catch them. And so we insist that people straighten up and fly right. There's all kinds of weird stuff that we do because of that. If I were at your church Sunday, I'd say, now this week, to practice being the people of God. See, we're the moral police, we're everything else. Go out and bless three people this week. Not random, intentionally. Ask the Spirit to pinch you three times this week. Limit it to three. Don't get crazy. Bless three people and make sure one of them doesn't deserve it. Now, you know what's funny about that? Recently, I was at a church and the pastor got up after I, you know, ranted on this. And he repeated the assignment for his folks. He says, now, all right, y'all, we're supposed to go out this Tennessee. All right, y'all, we're supposed to go out and bless three people, so we make sure one of them doesn't deserve it. He repeated just like that and almost had an aneurysm. Thinking, what part of the gospel do you not get? None of us deserve it. That's the point. You see, it's a clear biblical teaching that God only blesses people who straighten up and fly. Y'all, this is clear biblical stuff. So you send people out, but the point, you know. I'm just having problems up here. I'm editing down to get this thing done. And you're just, by the way, this is all introduction. Teasing. Listen, hey, you came to be with each other, not be with me. I'm going to let you go. But let me tell you two stories. There's this church in California. And I went back there after I told him, you know, go bless three people. And he said, you know, you remember when you preached? I said, yeah, I do. I only have one sermon. I have to have I have a lot of first-time gigs with a message that I have. So this guy says, well, the next day I went out and I was in the sport goods store and the Spirit pinched me. It's one of my pinches. He uses my words. And he said, go bless the manager. He's having a bad day. And the guy was grumpy and, you know, he kind of knew him, but he didn't know him. He just shopped there. And so he goes up to this guy and he says to him, are you having a bad day? And the manager looks up at him and says, yeah, I wish I was anywhere but here. You know, all that stuff they teach in corporate training. I want you to listen to this reckless act of obedience that followed by this Jesus follower who had been pinched by the Spirit. He said, I'll ask God to bless you. I'll pray for you. That's all he said. God looked up at him and said, are you serious? And remember, this is a sporting goods place. This is mano a mano. This is not a clinic. This is not a therapy counseling. They sell stuff in there that kills things. So this is not a tender, precious moments thing. Are you serious? He said. And the guy said, well, yeah, I'll pray for you. The guy then just upchucked all over it, figuratively. He told him about his marriage. He told him, hey, you know what's going on? You know what happens? You go out to bless people, you better be careful. You're going to get splattered. You know why? Because people, if you go to bless them, it just opens people. Remember all that stuff we've been trying to do to push the gospel down people's throats? It is a spiritual truth of the kingdom that you open people up by acts of blessing, acts of service, acts of kindness, It's the saw that cuts through all that stuff, and you just are ready to do open heart surgery. This guy told him his marriage has failed. He's working 80 hours a week. He didn't know what he's going to do. And this guy said, well, lucky for you, we've got a marriage retreat at our church and a 12-week series on financial freedom. You need to come to our church. Are you kidding? Gang, this is what I'm talking about. We have thought that church was the answer. That if we could get the guy to church, if we could get somehow interested in church, this guy doesn't need church. This guy needs God. And he needs him right there, right then, in the sporting goods place. And see, you can think of church as a place where certain things happen. You can think of church as a vendor of religious goods and services. Or you can think of church as a group of people on mission with God, who are living it out right where people are already living. See how this changes the scorecard? In my old days, it didn't count till the guy showed up at outreach night to say that someone came and visited me from your church and invited me to show up at the marriage deal. Listen, this guy's desperate. So this guy says, well, I'll just pray. And that's the other thing. When you work for the king, all you do is just what the king says. You don't have to fix it. You just are obedient to what he says. If the king says, pick it up there and put it down, you pick it up there and you put it down there. The king may ask you to do this whole, but you just whatever the king may ask you to empty your pockets. The king may ask you to, it's the point is, what does the king want you? So this guy said, I will pray. You got to believe God, not just believe in God. So when the guy says, I'm going to pray for you, you actually believe that God wants to show up and show off. And that's a kingdom look. Now, God doesn't need to show up and show off at most of our church services. We know how to get that done. We've already printed the bulletin. We've already got it laid out for the next 6 weeks. God doesn't need to show up there, so he's going to go where he loves to play. And there's just something about God. He loves to get credit. He's just that way. And so the guy says, I'm going to pray. So that's it. That's all he does. I'm going to pray for you. Goes back in there about 4 days later. Manager sees him coming in. He says, come here. You've been praying for me? Yeah. Guy came in the store 2 days ago. Knows around here for 2 hours. We tried to sell him everything. He wouldn't buy anything. He came back yesterday, though. He says, I want to buy your store. And he made me an offer, and I'm going to sell it. I'm going to make money. And my wife's agreed to go to counseling. That's in 4 days. So that's what happens when the king shows up. See, because the king raises the dead. The king creates universes. The king dreams up human hearts. How do you scorecard that? Well, I can tell you how this guy was scorecarding with me. He was so excited, he's turned into a habitual blesser. He is addicted. He has actually found the reason that he's a follower of Jesus. He gets to bless people. Which means then that we're going to have to figure out, so just where? I mean, in the old world, you see, and I don't have anything drawn in here, but you couldn't see anyone. But see, in the old church world, we had, we had the domains of politics and sports and government, health care, and education, all that. And what did the church do? We came right along and built our own little silo to compete with all of those. And try to draw people out of those and try to suck them over into the church. Desalinization plants. That's what we were. Sucking salt out of the community. But the missional church understands that the church is already deployed in government, in healthcare, in education. The king's already there. Because the church is already there. We're going to have to quit thinking in terms of a church. Missional Christians think of church as a verb, not a noun. When you flip, if you look at the church through kingdom lenses, I church at Starbucks. One of my great friends talks about being the chaplain of Starbucks. 3 mornings a week he's there. 5:30 in the morning, he gets up early and goes down there. But it's the same crew every week. Listen, this guy served in one church for over 30 years. This is a church we talked about at dinner down here. Now, over 30, his last budget was over $10 million. The guy knows how to do church. But he says, I'm having the time of my life. That other thing just about killed me. So Walt just, last time he just talked to me about this 19-year-old barista in there that he's adopted. Not legally, but emotionally and spiritually. Kid's got no dad. Walt's adopted. And when he had his 19, Walt's the one that gave him the 19-year-old birthday party. This Presbyterian minister that roams the streets is a blesser just right out there in front of God and everybody. Don't even have to wait for Sunday. Don't have to wait for the fall campaign. Don't have to wait. You're just there. This is the difference. Now, I know you're sitting there going, yeah, but, I'm seeing it, although, you know, and yeah, but, and if only keeps more stuff from happening in the kingdom than any other two phrases. Tomorrow, I'll answer some of your yeah, buts and if onlys, but I'm going to tell you, if you really want to do one thing, you got to want what I'm talking about so bad that it gets good. What do you think is the real receptivity to giving people hope? What do you think is the real receptivity to giving people life? Listen, when we look at the church through kingdom eyes, we don't anymore talk about the church being the hope of the world. Jesus is the hope of the world. We're going to have to go through a deconversion. We're going to have to understand that we are the connectors. We're not the show. And how big a show we have is not the issue. It's how obedient we've been to be the blessers. Just go bless them. If we will, maybe we'll get in on what God's doing. Maybe it'll be 80-30 all over again for us. How about it?
You've been listening to a broadcast from Life Point Church in Greenville, South Carolina. If this ministry has touched your life in some way, we would love to hear from you. Just visit our website at www.lifepointsc.org for more information. Or, if you prefer to reach us by letter, you can write to us at P.O. Box 27036, Greenville, South Carolina, 29616, USA. Until next time, may God bless you as you continue to follow Him.
Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. Open the eyes of my heart. I want to see you. I want to see you. Open the eyes of my heart. Of my